Les colloques du Collège de France.
So the last speaker of this day, so please hang in there. It's going to be a fantastic talk about quantum imaging. I know it's a long day. So our last speaker is Dr. Hugo De Fienne, and he's a researcher, a senior researcher at Sorbonne University in Paris, and he heads the Quantum Imaging Paris group. He completed his doctoral thesis at the Laboratoire Kassler-Brossels, and where he studied quantum optics in disordered media. Then he moved to for a postdoc in the US at Princeton, and then got a position in Glasgow, in Scotland, and I don't know why, but then he came back to France, and we are very happy about that, for a CNRS position. So he's developing quantum imaging with quantum light. Actually, you have already heard some of his work I presenting during some my lectures. So I'm very looking forward to your talk, Hugo, and please welcome him. Oh, well, we just did, so it's your turn.
Thank you very much, Pascal, for the introduction, and thank you again for the invitation. It's a great pleasure to be here and be able to talk here at the Collège de France. So in my presentation today, I'm going to talk about quantum imaging, and more specifically, I will focus on the work that we do in our group that involves entangled photon source. To start the presentation, I would like to first give you a very brief, but a bit broad overview of the current status of the field of quantum imaging. Quantum imaging is a branch of quantum metrology and quantum sensing using optics, in which we aim to use non-classical properties of light to improve the performance of imaging system, ideally beyond what can be achieved using classical light. Okay? And to illustrate this definition, I will discuss a few examples of recent works in the community, and more particularly in the field of microscopy, because that's where there is a lot of, I think, promises for quantum imaging. So the first, in this first example, it's a recent work from a group in Australia. They demonstrated by using non-classical source of light, they were able to improve the signal-to-noise ratio in a microscope. So the image you see on the left is a conventional image taken with a Raman coherent microscope. Okay, it's a yeast cell, and you see that it's quite noisy. The reason is that because essentially they had the power they were using was at the limit of the damage threshold of the cell. They go beyond that, the cell was dying. So they had to stay at this damage threshold. Then by replacing the classical source, one of the pumps of the Raman setup, by a bright squeeze light source, they were able to operate subshot noise and then effectively improving the signal-to-noise ratio in the image that they observe at the output, and for example, retrieving some of the features that were not visible in the classical image. So improving the SNR like that is the same spirit of what Antoine was showing on earlier. So you exploit the fact that you have sub-Poissonian statistics in the light to operate below shot noise and improve the SNR. Another criteria that is well observed, that explored in the community, is the spatial resolution. And here is another example. This is a fluorescence microscope, conventional fluorescence microscope, where the markers there are quantum dots, single photon emitters. And in this microscope, the image on the left is a conventional image, so just like accumulating photons. On the right here, what the researcher did, they exploited the fact that the dots are single photon emitters, and by measuring the lack of correlation that you have, because the photons are emitted one by one, they were able to improve the resolution, and you can see that reveals some much clearer feature than the one that you have in this image. So these examples of improving the signal-to-noise ratio, the spatial resolution, these have been like really explored a lot in the community over the past decades. And more recently, we have also seen some new works where we try to exploit the non-classical properties of light to develop new imaging modality. And Christine was talking about that this morning. There is one very recent and interesting work, which is called Imaging with Undetected Photons, in which you use source of entangled photon pairs to illuminate an object at a given wavelength, typically in the mid-IR, and form the image in the visible. This is very practical because then you can use silicon-based camera to do the imaging instead of the very noisy and expensive camera that you have in the mid-IR. Another example, this is the one I'm going to talk about and will be my focus of the talk today. I will show you how we can use also source of entangled photon to improve aberration correction and deblur images. So these are just four examples, but again, there are many more methods, other sources that are used, and also different application fields. Here I'm talking about microscopy, but there are also some quantum techniques in astronomy or detection and ranging and so on. But really, the main message that you need to keep in mind in quantum imaging is that what we try to do is to achieve something that is either impossible or at least very difficult to do using a classical source. All right, so now I'm going to go to the focus of my presentation today, which will be how we can use entangled photon pairs to improve our ability to correct aberration in microscopy or in imaging system in general. I'm sure you have already all used, at least touched, a microscope. When you have a microscope like that at home, you put a sample in the microscope, and what you expect to observe is a very nice image like that. Okay, the microscope we built there was not very performing, but that was the diffraction limit that we had. So this is a diffraction limited image. You see the small feature of the head of the bee there. However, when you try to do that, and when we did that first in the lab, in fact, this is more what you observe. The reason why the image is blurred is because you have aberration in your system. The aberration can come from the system itself, the microscope, or microscope objective, misalignments, you know, out of focus and things like that. But more importantly, it can also come from the specimen itself. Typically, if the specimen has some surrounding tissue, which typically happens when you try to image deep inside biological tissue, then you have a layer of tissue that scatters the light, and when it's really getting too scattering, that when we enter the regime of strong aberration, you have scattering and you see literally nothing at the output. Aberration and scattering are really a big problem in biology and medicine, because the goal there is really to try to do non-invasive imaging at like big penetration depth, as deep as possible, but while preserving the optical resolution, because that's the interest of using light. In neuroimaging, that's a very concrete example. In neuroimaging, people use three-photon microscope to look inside a living mouse. So that's the skull, you have the cortex, you see the neurons there. And you can see that because of scattering, actually, you see nothing after essentially 200 micrometer depth. So it means that you essentially do not have access to that much, except if you kill the mouse and you go and look inside. But ideally, you don't want to do that. Many techniques have been developed to overcome the problem of aberration and scattering, and the one I'm going to focus on today is what we call adaptive optics. This is directly inspired from astronomy. And in adaptive optics, you insert in the imaging path of your system a deformable mirror or a special light modulator in order to correct for the aberration and, for example, retrieve, in that case, a bit more depth of imaging, and they were able to go typically to 600 micrometers inside the skull. So let me focus a bit on this technique of adaptive optics, and this is a very simplified scheme of an imaging system. So here we have an object that emits some light, and you have a camera at the output. And so the two lenses, they represent the imaging system. Here you have the aberration, okay, generally they are around the object. And somewhere you have a deformable mirror or a special light modulator. So I'm going to say a special light modulator but they do essentially the same thing, an SLM. One important ingredient in this imaging system is what we call the point spread function. The point spread function is the function that links any point in the object plane to the output plane. And the PSF, essentially, in a simple imaging, coherent imaging configuration, is convolved with the object to give you the image. If the PSF is very sharp, almost a Dirac, almost a point, it means that essentially your image is exactly the square of your object, which is what you want to have. When you have aberration, the aberration actually distorts the PSF. And this is an example of a PSF that is distorted, so it's not a sharp point, which gives you also a blurred image. Adaptive optics will try to correct the PSF in order to get back to a very sharp PSF and get a clean image at the output. Okay, it's easy to say, but it's much more difficult to do, because the real challenge there is, okay, how do I actually find the optimal correction to put on the special light modulator in order to correct the aberration and get back to a sharp peak? So Again, this is inspired from astronomy. So researchers have developed different methods, and they have started to do the same thing as you do in astronomy, try to find a guide star. In astronomy, you can have a very isolated star, or you can use a laser to create a fake guide star. So it's kind of easy, because the stars are pretty far from each other. In biology, I mean, the samples are very complex. You have many points everywhere. So it's not that easy to get a guide star. And also, it's not so easy to use a wavefront sensor to do that. So you have different approaches, either direct or indirect. But this works, but you still need to have a guide star in your sample, which is not appearing very often. Another possibility is to do what we call image-based adaptive optics. In that case, you just look at the intensity at the output, and you tell yourself, OK, I know my object should be sharp. This is blurred. So let's do a blind optimization on the spatial light modulator until I get something sharp. Okay, it works sometimes. And there are different metrics used depending on the imaging configuration. So it's definitely not robust, strongly dependent on the object and the contrast mechanism of the microscope. In conclusion of that, adaptive optics in microscopy, it works, but it's not universal. Depending on the system, the type of object that you are looking, fluorescent, non-fluorescent, you have different approaches, and sometimes they just don't work and they don't converge to the optimal solution. What I'm going to show you today is that we can actually exploit correlation in entangled photon source in order to improve adaptive optics by providing a metric that gives a direct access to the point spread function. So my talk will be divided in two parts. The main part will be talking about how we can overcome aberration using photon correlations. So that's what I was mentioning. And if I have a bit more time at the end, I will explain you how we can also work in a scattering regime and try to bypass scattering also using entanglement. In that case, we're going to use the correlation between the photons. In that case, we're going to use entanglement between the photons. I will come back to that. So let's start with this part here. And as I said, we need a source of entangled photons for this to work. So let's start with the source. In our case, we use a source of spatially entangled photon pairs that we produce by a nonlinear process that is called spontaneous parametric down conversion. In a crystal, in this case, it's a type 1 BBO, and the laser is just a CW diode laser, 100 milliwatts. In this process, you have from time to time, with a very low efficiency, one blue photon that becomes two red photons. In our case, the photons red will be at 810 nanometer. And another important property is that they have you have momentum conservation. So the photon, when they get out, I'll come back to the state after, but when they get out of the crystal there, they have very strong anti-correlation in their momentum. So which means that when one flies in one direction, the other is almost exactly at the symmetric position there. Okay, anywhere like that in the space. So the state is there, but okay, if you want, I can come back on that. So we want to use this source, but we want to use the correlation between the photon of this source. So we need to do more than just measuring the intensity. We need also to measure the correlation between the photons. And for that, we're going to use a single photon sensitive camera. So in the example here, to map the momentum onto the camera, we just use a lens in a Fourier imaging configuration. So that every time you have a K like that, it corresponds to two specific pixels onto the camera. In this experiment I'm going to show you now, we are using a single photon avalanche diode camera array. It's just an array of APD next to each other that forms the camera. Each APD can detect a single photon and return one or zero. So if you just set a very long exposure time, like 10 milliseconds with your camera, and you accumulate the photons, this is exactly what you see. So this is an intensity image. The black dots are just dead pixels. So that's that for now. I know there is always a question coming, so this is just dead pixel. So at the output, you have a ring like that. Okay, nothing really special about that. If you tilt a bit the crystal, like you can also have a disk. But in particular, this does not give you any information about the correlation between the photons. This is just a classical image, the same way you will take with your cell phone, for example. If we reduce a bit the exposure time, 50 microseconds, we start seeing a bit the photons coming onto the camera. And if we reduce it really a lot, 10 nanoseconds, in that case, in fact, most of what you measure is just black image. There is nothing. So here, I just kept for you the image when we have the two photons. Otherwise, we're just going to see black stuff like for a long time. So this is just two photons on the sensor. And now, when you are in this regime, you can start actually measuring coincidence between all the different pairs of pixels of your sensor. If you do that and you accumulate long enough, you can build what we call the spatially resolved G2 function, or the correlation matrix, that will give you the joint probability of detecting photons across all the pairs of pixels in the sensor. This object, it's a 4D matrix, contains all the information about the correlation, but very difficult to use in practice. So, in the work I'm going to show you, in the adaptive optics work, we don't need this big matrix, we just need a projection of it. And to build the projection, it's much easier. So maybe you have looked, when I was showing that, maybe you looked at how the photons were arriving on the sensor. I will help you a little bit by pointing the barycenter of the photon now. So this is exactly the same video, but now I just pinpoint the barycenter. And here is the distribution of the barycenter. Okay? So you can see that in the distribution of the barycenter is almost always at the center of your image there. This tells you, it confirms what you know with this source, it confirms that essentially the photons always arrive in a perfectly symmetric, or almost perfectly symmetric way on the sensor. And essentially this width of the correlation is the strength of the correlation that you have in the photon pairs that depends both on the crystal and the pump that you have here. And in that case, it's quite strongly correlated because the photons really arrive almost always in a symmetric way. Just to compare, if you do the same experiment with completely uncorrelated photon pairs, this is what you observe. No correlation, no peak. So the peak that you have at the center of this correlation image is really a signature of the strong anti-correlation that you have between the photons. And it's very important to keep that in mind. Here I've shown you an experiment that is done with a SPAD array, but we're also using different type of camera to do this experiment. We can use EMCCD, TimePix camera. So I don't have the time to go into details into that, but in the next part of my talk, sometime you're going to see image taken from one of these devices, but I don't want to get too much into detail. What is really important for you to remember there is that we are not only measuring the intensity at the output of our system, we also measure the correlation. So every time we have two types of information. We take an image, we take two images, one is the intensity, one is the correlation. And that's what we're going to use. Okay, we have the source, we have the detector, so let's start building an imaging system. Okay, it's oversimplified, but essentially this is what we have. We have a photon pair source here. Here there is a filter that cuts the blue. We go in the Fourier plane, we put the sample in the Fourier plane of the source, and then we image this sample onto the camera. What I want to show you first is how we can relate the correlation to the optical aberration, because this is my problem at first. So first, I don't want to worry about the sample too much. I just have the camera, and this is the intensity image that we get. In that case, I tilted a little bit the crystal so that we have an homogeneous intensity, but this is the ring that you were seeing before. And we have the correlation. This was taken with an EMCCD camera. Okay, so let's see what happened when we put a bit of aberration in our system. To put aberration, it's easy. Let's defocus one lens. We just defocus the lens and get out of focus. Okay? When we do that, of course, there is absolutely no change in the intensity. I mean, the intensity is inhomogeneous. It will stay the same in that case. Okay, no problem. But if you look at the correlation peak here, you can see that not only the correlation, the delta K increase, so it gets broadened, and also the signal decreases. Okay? So there is clearly a dependence of the strength of the correlation of your photons in function of the aberration that you have in your system. And mathematically, this is pretty clear to see. If you look at the function of the G2, it directly depends, so there is a factor there, a constant, but it directly depends on the point spread function of your system. Not exactly the PSF convolves with itself, but at the end of the day, what is important is here you have information about the PSF directly through a measurement of the correlation. That's good, because now there is a way to have a direct access to the PSF without even looking at the intensity. Now let's get more close to an imaging system. Let's put a sample in our problem. So we have the B again here. And of course, in the intensity, when there is no aberration, you just see the B, no problem. And in the same time, you have strong correlation, okay? The light, the fact that the B is here doesn't matter, okay? The photons forming the image of the B are still strongly anti-correlated, so you have a sharp peak here. Now let's introduce some aberration in our system. So in that case, that was artificial aberration with a PDMS layer. If you do that, the image gets blurred, okay, as expected. But more importantly, the correlation image also broadens. Okay, and it's also a bit more noisier, but the important is that it also broadens. And again, we have the same relationship. The impact of the object is just in the K in front of it. So we still have a direct dependence on the PSF. Let's do adaptive optics, okay? But I don't want to use this because I've shown you before that image-based metrics are not very reliable, so I want to use the correlation image to do the adaptive optics. Okay, so I want to get from here to here using an iterative feedback algorithm. I introduce a special light modulator in my imaging path of my system. And then I take an algorithm based on Zernike polynomial. Oh, sorry, I choose, for example, the central peak here. And I start putting some Zernike polynomial. So I won't spend too much time on that, but it's a basis of aberration that is used in classical owl. And you run different strengths of the aberration, and you see that every time you stop at the maximum, then you go to the next mode, you go at the maximum, you go to the next mode, you go at the maximum, and so on and so on. And finally, at the end, you get back a sharp peak on the correlation image. So you just look at the correlation of the photons, do an iterative algorithm, get back to a sharp peak. Great. So now the photons are back strongly correlated at the output. And now if you look at the intensity image, it is also corrected. So in that case, I never looked at the intensity image. I just looked at the correlation between the photon pairs to have a direct information about the PSF, made a feedback loop on it, and was able to correct the aberration in my system. So we did a bit more than that. I invite you to read more details in the paper there, but so if you look at the correction after, we have the ground through E, so it's pretty close. It's actually working very well. And but since we are in a workshop about, in a colloquy about quantum technology, and I wanted a bit to discuss, you know, when we got this result, we of course ask ourselves, can we use that really in microscopy? Is that useful, or is it just a curiosity or a technique that is actually, you know, fun to work on? So we started to do a bit of benchmarking compared to classical owl. And we analyze first the advantages of our technique, because that's where you start, okay? So yeah, it's amazing. It's kind of an universal aberration metric because you have a direct access to the PSF. You don't need any guide star, no object, no specimen dependence, and of course, no wavefront sensor. So just the camera, and you measure the correlation. It's great. Okay, the drawbacks are also quite important. So first, the iterative process is quite slow, okay? Each correlation image takes at least 10 seconds. So the iterative is at least 100 steps, so 10, oh wait, so it's a long time, especially if the medium is moving. The more terrible drawback is the weak flux of these sources. So photon pairs typically have a flux of nanowatt, 100 of picowatt, so it's extremely weak. If you put that in a real microscope, including the losses and the scattering, I mean, essentially you see nothing. Very bad. And on top of that, well, in that case, we need to have strong correlation in the object plane. So you need to have, at some point, this strong anti-correlation in the object plane. And to be honest, it's very difficult to be able to illuminate the object that is inside something with something correlated and then get back. Anyway, it does not work very well. So it appears quite difficult to use that in a realistic condition. But we really wanted to push that, so we keep working a bit on that, and these results there are really very, very recent, so over the past 6 months. So one first part is we actually reduced a lot the time it takes for the iterative process. We don't need actually an iterative process anymore, because we have actually almost the image of the PSF. Not exactly PSF convolved with itself, but almost that. And essentially, since you have the information without any trace of the object, you can use some phase retrieval algorithm to get back directly to the phase aberration without having to do it iteratively. This was done thanks to the expertise of Jung Sok Baek, who is a postdoc at the LKB, and we worked together on this project, which is really, really useful. We still need to be make better, but it's really very promising to go faster. The second part is the problem with the weak source and the source of photon pairs. Okay, it's bad for microscopy. If we put that in a microscope, you won't see anything. It's not a good idea. But we realized two things. The first thing we realized, and I told you, we don't need entanglement there. It's just the strong correlation between the photon that you are using to do that. Okay. So actually, you don't need entanglement, and we realized, and Shurya, who is somewhere here, actually did some math and demonstrated that actually we don't need at all strong anti-correlation between photons. Actually, classical correlation can do the same job. You just do the processing a little bit differently. It's not the same processing, but you can also have classical correlation, also have a direct access to the PSF of your system like that. Great. So now we move out from the quantum. We can use classical source even better. In fact, most of the microscope already designed already have some sources with correlation in them. So we don't even need to bring the source. It's kind of already in there. We just need to smartly measure the correlation and have a smart measurement to make the correlation image that tells us the PSF at the output. And we did it. So recently, we worked with collaborators at the ISMO, Alexandra Fagola, Sandrine Devecfort, Fabrice Arms, and Antoine Hubert. And we used one of their microscopes, so a real microscope. It's a DNA-plate microscope. It's essentially a single molecule localization microscopy microscope, where the emitters blink, and you know they use that to do localization. Okay, we didn't want to do localization, but using that, we were able to retrieve some correlation image, and actually implement an iterative process on it. And you can see this is an image of a Cas7, so of a cell that is blurred at the beginning. And using our approach, we were able to retrieve, remove the aberration, and get something clean at the output. So it does work well beyond the quantum regime, and also in essentially microscopes that already exist. Cool. So we managed to make. So we are strongly working on that at the moment, and we were very happy that this can be transferred to something that could be really useful for a microscopist. How I'm doing in terms of the time? Perfect. Okay. So, what I would like you to remember from this first part of my presentation is, so we developed a technique to improve adaptive optics using photon correlation. It's very nice because it gives a direct access to the PSF of the system, which is very difficult to do in practice with classical imaging, because in general, you only see the image, which always incorporates the object. And which is even better is that actually we can, getting inspired from this technique, we can also transpose it to the classical regime and apply it into real, already established microscope, and it works. So, in the last 15 minutes I have, I will now get into a more complex situation where we have scattering, not only aberration, but scattering, and show you that in that case we can actually play some trick with entanglement to transmit image to scattering. So let's get our imaging system. We have the sample here. In that case, a combination of a SPAD and an EMCCD, but again, correlation image, intensity image, so we see our sample here. And in that case, we put, not aberration, we put a scattering medium. So typically, it's a layer of paraffin. So it really destroyed a lot the intensity at the output, so you are not blurred anymore, you really see almost nothing. And same for the correlation image. Here you have a two-photon speckle, so something much more complex than what you had before. Okay, we decided, we didn't see at first what was the problem. We said, okay, let's do the same optimization algorithm. We pick up a point at the output, and we slightly just put a special light modulator here. We change the optimization basis, because now you have very strong scattering, so the Zernike basis is not the best one to use, so we use the pixel basis, but the concept is the same. You just keep optimizing the special light modulator until you increase the intensity at this point here. Okay, so you blindly do an iterative optimization like that and keep going with it. Okay. Without that much surprise, so we got a pattern at the end, and with not too much surprise, we were able to refocus the correlation at the output. Okay, so in that case, the photons are again back anti-correlated after the scattering medium on your camera. What was more surprising is that when we did look at the intensity, essentially it did nothing. So it didn't work at all. Okay, we wanted to confirm that. Okay, so we started to look, we measured the PSF of the system by just putting a laser in the system, a point source, and see what the PSF looked like. And in that case, you can see that the PSF is not a point, like a point giving a point, it's a speckle pattern. So it makes sense that we see nothing here, but it's very weird that we actually see some correlation now. Because that means that I found a correction pattern that allows my photon to be back exactly correlated the same way they were before the scattering medium. So essentially, the medium has been rendered transparent for photon pairs, but not for the classical light. So if you send one photon, it gets scattered. If you send the two photon entangled, they go through exactly as if there is no scattering medium. Strange. Strange. So to explain you, to give an interpretation to this result, which is a negative result, but I will come back on that after, we wanted to interpret that, and I need to come back on the source. The source I've presented to you is a source of spatially entangled photon pairs, but so far I've only used the correlation in one basis. I measure the correlation in the momentum, between the momentum of the photon, so in the momentum basis. But because you have entanglement, in fact the correlations are strong, as we say, so it means that they persist if you make change of basis. And in particular, for example, in that case, if you measure also, detect the photon in the position basis, okay, so you can do that by just imaging the crystal onto the camera, you have again strong, not anti-correlation, but strong correlation between the photons at the output. So they arrive like that, and again, the photons are strongly correlated. So because you have entanglement, there are multiple bases where you can find strong correlation. Need to keep that. And in fact, we all know that very well. Oh yeah. Okay. This is the fact that you have strong correlation in multiple bases is in fact a signature of the presence of entanglement. And sometimes this is used to detect entanglement. This is what I wanted to come back. We all know that very well. Because in a Bell experiment, in a Bell test, when you have polarization, just to remind you, if you have a polarization entangled state like that, you measure in the HV basis, you have strong correlation like that. But in fact, you can also build a completely non-entangled state that also has strong correlation in the HV basis. No problem. However, when you start changing the basis, the correlation persists when you have an entangled state, but they do not persist if you have something that is non-entangled. So the fact that you have correlation in multiple bases is a signature of the presence of entanglement in your state. I like this phrasing that is in this paper, which is saying that quantum correlations are more resistant against change of basis than ordinary correlation in separable states. It's a bit the idea that is behind. Okay, so now we have that in mind, let's come back to our setup. Because in fact, what is happening during the optimization, so when you have nothing in the system, the imaging basis is essentially an identity transformation. One point becomes one point. So this is the identity. Okay? When you put the scattering medium in it, it's a random basis transformation. It's a linear system, so you do linear mixing of the light. So you have a random transformation between the input state, the input plane, and the output plane. So now when the system optimizes to get back the correlation, it turns out that it does not optimize to the identity basis, which is the one that will give you the imaging again. It just optimizes to any other basis that is accessible, and they are accessible and they exist because the state is entangled at the input. In other words, you end up into this bad situation because you have entanglement between your photons at the input. A cool way to see that, so now maybe a question you can have is why I see that with scattering and not with weak aberration? Sorry, I thought you were telling me the time. But so a cool way to see that, why you have that in scattering and not aberration, is the fact that, so if you look now at the landscape of solution that you have, because you have entanglement, there are many possible solutions, many possible transformations in which you have strong correlation at the output. Okay? So in fact, you have multiple maxima in the landscape of the optimization process. When you have only aberration in your system, you only get out, and one of them is the identity. When you have aberration, you get slightly out, but then when you start the optimization, you went quickly back to the solution that is the identity because you are not that far. When you put scattering, you go very far, and then when you run the optimization, you get stuck in another maximum. Okay, so this is... For imaging, it's really annoying, but in terms of physics, it was very interesting to study that, in particular because when you do all these experiments with classical light, there is no multiple solution, there is only one, and you always reach to this one. But still, we wanted to do imaging, so we wanted to solve this problem at first, so we started to think about, okay, what can we do to still make the image going through this system by using this optimization with the scattering? What we did, came back again to the system, and we play a trick, which instead of having the image of the object encoded in the intensity, which is not corrected, we encoded the image into the correlation of the photons. And to do that, I need you to trust me a little bit on that because I won't spend too much time on that. But if you put a sample, so here is the object 8, you know, in the Fourier plane of the crystal, you actually shape the pump in such a way that at the output, the intensity has nothing, but the image is entirely transferring the correlation. So instead of having a sharp peak in the correlation, you see the image in the correlation. Great, so now we have the image in the correlation. Let's do the experiment again. When we put a scattering, no surprise, everything is distorted, okay? But now if we use the solution we just found using the non-classical optimization, in that case, even if The system is not an imaging system anymore, so if you try to look through it, you see nothing, it's opaque. Even if you have that, we are able to transmit the image of the object by encoding it onto the correlation of the photon pairs. Just for a sanity check, you know, we took the same system and of course put some sample with classical light just to an imaging, and in that case it's completely destroyed. Okay, you see nothing with classical light, but you can transmit the information if you encode them onto the entanglement of photon pairs. This is a bit of a summary of what I was saying, the different techniques. So when you have no shaping with entangled photon, you have nothing. Classical light, you have nothing. With our solution, so non-classical shaping, this is when you do classical, you use classical optimization, you make the medium transparent, so this is the identity. No surprise, you see both the classical image and the image encoded on the correlation, but our solution is there when you see no classical image on the correlation, but you do see the object in the correlation image because you encoded it on the photon pair. So a way of thinking about that is that we essentially tailored, using the spatial rate modulator, we tailored the disorder to reach one of these bases that allow to maintain the correlation, but not the intensity. So we effectively made the medium transparent for entangled photons, but not for classical light. Again, in the spirit of this symposium, we started to think, what can we do with that? Okay, because to be honest, this is even more complex than before, because now the object is on the pump, you pump, okay. It's okay. The application for microscopy are out of scope. But we started to think about it, and the new postdoc just joined 6 months ago, Xin, started to do some very cool experiment where we removed actually the scattering medium and started to engineer directly using a spatial rate modulator this solution there. And even better than that, we had some dynamic solution. So we have a spatial rate modulator that was randomly changing, but programming solution that were maintaining the correlation but still opaque for classical light. By doing that, if you use this system with a classical image, classical intensity, so this is the classical intensity, you see that the image is completely blurred. So no classical information goes through. If you encode an object in the correlation, it works very well, so it gets through it. And even more important, if you use classically correlated photons, so with no entanglement, this doesn't work. Because this effect is really sensitive to the fact that you have entanglement between your photons at the output, which ensures the existence of these multiple bases. Okay, we are not sure what to do with it, but the idea was to do a quantum classical imaging filter or something like that, but we are working on it. And so I'm reaching the end of my talk. What I would like to remember from this part is, so we can transmit image through scattering media using this non-classical optimization technique. Entanglement is crucial in that, and this effectively appears as a sort of a quantum classical image filter because it is transparent to entangled photons and not to classical light. To wrap up this presentation, so I've shown you two different approaches that we have developed in our group. So in the first one, we started from a quantum concept, so the idea of using this strong correlation to map the PSF. We developed a new technique, so correlation-based adaptive optics, and now we can we're trying to transfer into microscopy. And so it's a path that starts from quantum and goes to classical, which often happens, but in that case, it's actually very, very useful. On the other hand, this one is a bit more fundamental, so we have a sort of a quantum concept again, and try to think about what application we can do with that. Okay. Again, here, because this is the work we do in my group, so I'm strongly focused, but just to remind you, there are many other techniques and applications in quantum imaging that I think can be very useful, completely outside of that, as I presented at the beginning, you know, increasing the SNR, the resolution, imaging with undetected photon. I think all of these techniques are very, very promising for the future of imaging in general and microscopy in particular. I would like to thank, of course, all the people from the team, including the previous student, Baptiste, Chloé, Raj, who was a postdoc, and Patrick, who were strongly involved in all the work I've shown you today. Also to tell you that I've shown you a part of what we do in the group here, so imaging and complex media, but we also have a much more fundamental axis when we study high-dimensional entanglement, high-dimensional spatial entanglement, how to generate, to control, to engineer, and to characterize this type of states. I would like also to thank all our collaborators on these different projects, and I would like to thank you for your attention.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.